Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A fantastic Friday to you. It is May the 20th, 2022. And we've got some fantastic news coming out of Frisco. It's a San Francisco Friday today. And you can call in 888-914-9149. I'm going to share that breaking news with you in just a minute. But I want you to know that you can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, too, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Once again, the phone number to call the studio line is 888-914-9149. We have so much to get into today. I can't wait to get rolling with this. Later in the program, I'm going to be telling you about a modern-day folk hero. 1 year ago today, he was riding high. He was on top of the world. And just a year later, right now, he finds himself a pariah, and he has been out of the public eye for some months now. Who is he? It's a Shakespearean tragedy of sorts. I'll tell you later, so stay tuned. Plus, producer Jim has put together a fantastic segment called The Week That Was. We do it every Friday, and I can't wait to share that with you later. It's been quite a week so far on the program, but it's not over yet. We have so much to get to today, and by now you probably have heard of the breaking news coming out of the Archdiocese of San Francisco. Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione, who is a friend of the program, he's been on the show before, has banned Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi from receiving the Eucharist in his archdiocese, which is her home archdiocese. And I'm going to have much more to say about that in just a second. But we'll put this in the show notes later. He was on the program before. He was on the show, one of the first interviews I did on the show, actually. And it was really great because we got to see another side of him that you don't get to see in public. Archbishop Cordiglione, I think he's a great archbishop. And sometimes with any figure who's in the public eye, sometimes we can forget their humanity. But we talked about his love for his passion for jazz. It's just an incredible show. He just really lit up. So you got to listen to this interview. So we're going to post this in the show notes. When the podcast is ready, you'll be able to check that one out as well. And one of my listeners, one of my faithful listeners to the program, keeps telling me, hey, whenever you talk about Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione, you should really play the Godfather music in the background, the movie music. No, I'm not going to do that. First of all, it'd be extremely cheesy. Number two, it's Cordiglione, not Corleone. Okay, that's not his name. It's not like Don Corleone, Don Vito Corleone, played by Marlon Brando, of course, memorably so, in the Godfather films. Although he is kind of a Don. He is kind of a Don because, remember, priests in some traditions are called Don, right? Like Saint Don Bosco, right? And he is kind of... he is trying to be a godfather here. That's certainly true. He's trying to be, and he's really exercising his responsibility as a spiritual father to Nancy Pelosi. He's dishing out some much needed tough love here. So let's get it straight from him. I want to read to you the press release that came out this afternoon from the Archdiocese of San Francisco, and it's entitled Letter to the Faithful on the Notification Sent to Speaker Nancy Pelosi. So let's hear directly from Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. I know that many of you out there are in that archdiocese. We have a lot of listeners in California, and you probably have a lot of hot takes on this. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. But let me just read the letter to you. It says, I'm quoting him here, "My dear brothers and sisters in Christ, Pope Francis has been one of the world's most vocal advocates of human dignity in every stage and condition of life. He decries what he evocatively calls the throwaway culture. There can be no more extreme example of this cultural depravity than when direct attacks on human life are enshrined in a nation's law, celebrated by society, and even paid for by the government. This is why Pope Francis, as much as any pope in living memory, has repeatedly and vividly affirmed the Church's clear and constant teaching that abortion is a grave moral evil. Surely no pope has spoken more eloquently than Pope Francis did in the earliest days of his pontificate, saying on September the 20th, 2013, there's a quote from Pope Francis here, and Pope Francis said, "In a frail human being, each one of us is invited to recognize the face of the Lord, who in his human flesh experienced the indifference and solitude to which we so often condemn the poorest of the poor, whether in developing countries or in wealthy societies. Every child who, rather than being born, is condemned unjustly to being aborted, bears the face of Jesus Christ, bears the face of the Lord, who even before he was born, and then just after birth, experienced the world's rejection." And of course, that quote from Pope Francis alludes to Herod, King Herod the Great, who wasn't so great, obviously, in many respects, sought to kill the infant Christ and slaughtered all the boys 2 years of age and under in Bethlehem and the vicinity, trying to take out the rival, because Herod liked to call himself the King of the Jews. And he said, "What is this King of the Jews? Who is this King of the Jews who's been born? I've got to get rid of him." And so this murderous desire to eliminate someone who was in the way, someone who, and there's a lot of parallels here to abortion in a certain sense. Anyway, so back to the letter from Archbishop Corleone. He says, "Another valuable insight Pope Francis gives is that of the interconnectedness of all of the threats to human dignity in the throwaway culture. As one clear example, in his landmark 2015 encyclical on the environment, Laudato Si, he underscored that care for our common home includes care for the weakest among us, including the unborn child. When we fail to acknowledge as part of reality the worth of a poor person," he's quoting the Pope again, "when we fail to acknowledge as part of reality the worth of a poor person, a human embryo, a person with disabilities, to offer just a few examples, it becomes difficult to hear the cry of nature itself. Everything is connected. Once the human being declares independence from reality and behaves with absolute dominion, the very foundations of our life begin to crumble. For instead of carrying out his role as a cooperator with God in the work of creation, man sets himself up in place of God and thus ends up provoking a rebellion on the part of nature." And that was from Laudato Si. So Archbishop Corleone says, "As the Archbishop of San Francisco, I am bound to be concerned for all the Christian faithful entrusted to my care." And he's quoting there from the Code of Canon Law, Canon 383. He says, "This most serious duty can sometimes become unpleasant, especially when Catholics in public life explicitly promote practices that involve the direct taking of innocent human life, which is what abortion does. I have struggled with this issue in my own conscience for many years now, especially with regard to the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives and member of our Archdiocese, Nancy Pelosi. I've received letters from very many of you over the years expressing distress over the scandal being caused by such Catholics in public life who promote such grievously evil practices as abortion. I have responded that conversion is always better than exclusion, and before any such action can be taken, it must be preceded by sincere and diligent efforts at dialogue and persuasion. With regard to Speaker Pelosi, I have striven to follow this wise route, as delineated by then Cardinal Ratzinger, later Pope Benedict XVI, in a letter that he wrote to U.S. bishops regarding Holy Communion and Catholic politicians who cooperate in the grave evils of abortion and euthanasia." So a lot of people, just to interject here for a minute, a lot of people, when I saw this this afternoon on Twitter, And obviously, this is breaking news, just happened this afternoon on the East Coast. Obviously, a little bit earlier in the day, and on the West Coast in San Francisco, in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, a lot of people in the comments are saying, well, it's about time. This is 10 years too late. Why didn't you do this earlier? Well, understand that he has tried to reach her in various ways. He's tried all kinds of different approaches. This is really kind of a last resort. And he's tried to be as pastoral as possible with respect to dealing with Pelosi. So anyway, so here's a quote from the future Pope Benedict, Cardinal Ratzinger, just before, by the way, just before he became Pope. And he wrote this back in 2004. This was the future Pope Benedict's counsel on this that he wrote to U.S. bishops. Here's what he said. Cardinal Ratzinger said, when a person's formal cooperation becomes manifest, understood in the case of a Catholic politician as his consistently campaigning and voting for permissive abortion and euthanasia laws, his pastor should meet with him, or her, obviously, instructing him about the church's teaching, informing him that he is not to present himself for Holy Communion until he brings to an end the objective situation of sin, and warning him that he will otherwise be denied the Eucharist. When these precautionary measures have not had their effect, and the person in question, with obstinate persistence, still presents himself to receive the Holy Eucharist, the minister of Holy Communion must refuse to distribute it. End of quote. So that's what Cardinal Ratzinger said back in 2004. And now Archbishop Cordeleone, he quotes Canon 915 of the Code of Canon Law, which says this. It says, those obstinately persevering in manifest grave sin are not to be admitted to Holy Communion. End of quote. So that's what he's doing right now. He's essentially invoking, in Pelosi's case, Canon 915 of the Code of Canon Law. And then he talks about how a year ago, Archbishop Cordeleone released a pastoral letter, which was called Before I Formed You in the Womb, I Knew You. And you should look that up if you have a chance to Google that. That's a beautiful document. And he talked about the church's teaching on what it means to cooperate with evil, especially the evil of abortion, and the disposition that one should have to receive Holy Communion. So it's kind of a very good teaching document from the Archbishop. So anyways, let me go back to his letter here. He says, quote, unfortunately, Speaker Pelosi's position on abortion has become only more extreme over the years, especially in the last few months. Just earlier this month, she once again, as she has many times before, explicitly cited her Catholic faith while justifying abortion as a choice, this time setting herself in direct opposition to Pope Francis. And so this is a quote from Pelosi here. The very idea that they would be telling women the size, timing, or whatever of their family, the personal nature of this is so appalling. And I say that as a devout Catholic. End of quote. So Nancy Pelosi said this in a panel discussion that happened back in March. And then she also said this. Pelosi said, they say to me, Nancy Pelosi thinks she knows more about having babies than the Pope does. Yes, I do. Are you stupid? End of quote. So that's what Pelosi had to say very recently. All right, so Cordeleone goes back to say, quote, and this is the Archbishop talking, after numerous attempts to speak with her to help her understand the grave evil she is perpetrating, the scandal she is causing, and the danger to her own soul she is risking, I have determined that the point has come in which I must make a public declaration that she is not to be admitted to Holy Communion unless and until she publicly repudiate her support for abortion, quote-unquote, rights, and confess and receive absolution for her cooperation in this evil in the sacrament of penance. I have accordingly sent her a notification to this effect, which I have now made public. He goes on to say, this is kind of the end of the letter, please know that I find no pleasure whatsoever in fulfilling my pastoral duty here. Speaker Pelosi remains our sister in Christ. Her advocacy for the care of the poor and vulnerable elicits my admiration. I assure you that my action here is purely pastoral, not political. I have been very clear in my words and actions about this. Speaker Pelosi has been uppermost in my prayer intentions ever since I became the Archbishop of San Francisco. It was my prayer life that motivated me to ask people all around the country to join me in praying and fasting for her in the Rose and Rosary for Nancy campaign. I especially pray that she will see in the roses she has received a sign of the honest love and care that many thousands of people have for her. I very sincerely thank all of you who have participated in this campaign and all others who have otherwise prayed and made spiritual sacrifices for our speaker, and I ask you to continue or start to do so. I also ask you to actively support with your time, talent, and treasure the efforts of pro-life advocates to accompany women in crisis pregnancies and to offer them the support they need to make a choice for life, as well as those who have been scarred by the abortion experience. And then he has a website that he points to from the Archdiocese, which is on their sfarchdiocese.org/standwithmoms. So give some resources there. He says, this is what it means to be truly pro-life. It is the way of love. May God grant us the grace to be true advocates for the dignity of human life in every stage and condition of life, and to accompany, support, and love women who otherwise would be alone and afraid at a most vulnerable time in their lives. He signs off, in Christ, our source of new life, Most Reverend Salvatore J. Cordeleone, Archbishop of San Francisco. So that was the letter that was released just today from the Archbishop. So I know you guys have a lot of opinions on this. You want to have your voice heard. 888-914-9149. We're going to get your phone calls right after this really quick break on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Today's show is sponsored by Colbe Academy. With more than 40 years of experience in Catholic home education, Colbe Academy offers a blend of classical Catholic curriculum and the latest educational technology. More info at relevantradio.com/Colbe.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call. 888-914-9149. We're talking about the breaking news that just came out this afternoon. Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone of San Francisco has banned Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi from receiving communion, from receiving the Eucharist in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, which is the only archdiocese he has any control over, because of her militant pro-abortion public stance. And we're going to go to the phones now to see what you guys think about this. I read the letter before the break, so if you did miss that part of the show, be sure to download the podcast later. It'll be out about an hour after the show ends. We're going to go to Jill in New Jersey. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I just wanted to say God bless the Archbishop, and I just hope that the pastors of Biden and the pastor of all these states where they are so liberal, not only with abortion, but with terminating the lives of the newborn as part of that. And I just think this archbishop should be canonized. And because, you know, it is so scandalous to the rest of us when they use the word Catholic and abortion in the same sentence, it confuses everyone. Because I just can't say enough, and thank you so much for sharing this. This is wonderful news.
Well, thank you for calling in, Jill, and for listening. That was Jill in New Jersey, and yeah, and that's exactly why he did this. And by the way, apparently for quite a few months, he has been trying to get a hold of Pelosi, trying to meet with her, and she has not responded to him. She has said this, and again, like when you read the comments, I was scrolling through some of the Twitter comments when this was released, and a lot of people who live in San Francisco were basically saying, hey, I'm a pro-choice Catholic who lives in San Francisco. You're not going to be able to stop me from receiving the Eucharist when I'm in the communion line. Well, that's because no one knows who you are and what you're publicly, now, if you were to blurt out in the line, I'm pro-abortion. I would hope that they wouldn't give you the Eucharist. But having said that, Yeah, I mean, nobody really knows. I mean, we can't presume when someone's in the communion line what their state of grace might be, whether they're in the state of grace. But in the case of Pelosi, she is a public figure, and she has publicly stated her support for abortion. So it's a bit of a different ballgame because her stance is known, and it is causing grave scandal to the faithful because people are confused. Here's a statement that she made recently on this, a public statement that she made. This was, again, back in March during a panel discussion. She said, quote, "It isn't about what is your religious belief. It's what is the right of people to make their own decisions and the size and time or if they're going to have a family. This really gets me burned up, in case you didn't notice, because, again, I'm very Catholic, devout, practicing, all of that. They would like to throw me out, but I'm not going because I don't want to make their day," end of quote. So that was Nancy Pelosi. So she thinks, she's under the impression that she is devout, that she is practicing. Well, she's practicing something, but it's not the Catholic religion because the tenets of the Catholic religion are publicly known for all to see. Pick up the catechism, look it up. And so this is part of the juxtaposition. And so there's an incoherence in the way that she's living, and it is causing scandal for people when they see Catholics who are in public life, especially in political life, like the president of the United States, Joe Biden, is another case. And so we'll get into the whole question of, well, what about him? And why hasn't he been banned from receiving the Eucharist? Well, we'll talk about that in just a second. But let's go now to Nick, who is in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Gail. Thank you for taking my call. I think previous caller was touching on something there. And I'm really glad to see that there's been a line drawn in the sand. I think, though, that we really need to pray hard and fast for our bishops, because now that the line is there, we're probably going to start seeing factions, you know, bishops going against that, saying that we're weaponizing the Eucharist, and then the bishops that will side with them. So that could potentially, in my mind, even be a greater scandal than what we see in the political scene. So, yeah, I think that it's something we got to be careful going forward, you know?
And that's a great point, Nick. We do have to pray for the bishops. Yeah, because there is the possibility of fault lines being exposed within the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops because they are not necessarily all in agreement about that. But one thing we're in agreement about here at Relevant Radio is that we're in unity with the bishops. We pray for them. We do pray for them, and we should fast for them and make spiritual sacrifices for them because they have a grave responsibility. And we've already seen this sort of on a global scale. And speaking of Archbishop Cordiglione, just a couple of days ago, he lent his support to bishops in Poland who are standing against what's going on in Germany with some German bishops, perhaps even the majority of German bishops who want to use the synodal path, quote unquote, to depart from church teaching on areas of morality and sexuality and marriage. And he said, no, we've got to take a stand for what the authentic Catholic faith is, because this is not a cafeteria system. The teachings about morality are grounded in natural law too, not just church teaching, but in the natural law. But the authority of the church, you can't just pick and choose what doctrines you're going to believe and what doctrines you're going to throw out. That's not Catholicism. That's Protestantism or something else. And Ronald Knox, a brilliant convert to the Catholic faith, somewhat in the tradition of St. John Henry Newman, and back in 1927. He wrote a book back in 1927 that's as fresh today as it was then, called The Belief of Catholics. And he said, you can't reject the Eucharist, but then go on saying that the New Testament is the Word of God, because both rest on the exact same foundation, the authority, the teaching authority of the Catholic Church. You're living a schizophrenic life, and I'm paraphrasing him here, if you do that, because you've got to accept the whole enchilada. I know a lot of food stuff here. I don't want to get you hungry. But that's the kind of spiritual sustenance that we need. All right, I'll stop there. But let's go now to Sue on line 7, who's calling from Wisconsin. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Kale. Beautiful, beautiful job in wording. And I like the word cafeteria. And you are exactly right about the Lutherans and evangelicals who hit us constantly on the Eucharist, in our masses, etc. And they are my good friends, and I love them.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
we are seeing so many converts coming from the evangelical church to Catholicism, but the thing that is bringing them is the stance on abortion, and they have been waiting for the church to do something. And I am sorry, I don't agree that Nancy Pelosi is a devout Christian or a Christian. I don't believe that at all, and I'm in politics. And I do believe the next thing is for Biden, and I am so very proud of Cardinal Burke, the stance that he has taken in the past against those in public office, that they should not receive communion. But this is so crucial for us, for the world. We stand for life. And do we believe it, and do we act it out from the tenets of our church, from the leadership of our church? And now that our leadership has come out, Satan is going to push us as Catholics and divide us, just as your previous caller said. So gird yourself against him, folks, because he is a liar, he's the father of lies, and he's going to try to divide us. This is the right stance. The Archbishop is correct. God bless him for his long prayers. And I am so, 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 so sorry for Nancy Pelosi to be this radical, this evil, and this dark, and then cross herself on that National Day of Prayer on national TV, cross herself three times as they were doing prayers on the floor of Congress. Shame, shame, shame. It is not okay. It's not political. We stand for morals from life, womb to the tomb. And believe me, they are coming for our elderly and our disabled. I know that personally from my personal family, that this is what the nursing homes and the institutions are doing. They're trying to cut off life. Thank God for the Bioethics Center and the Terry Schiavo's Brother Center that are fighting for these things and for our Archbishop. But absolutely, let's pray for our bishops. Thank you, Cale, for your words. You've given such simple, clean ways of looking at this with your language. I mean, this is your thing. So thank you, Cale. You have done a beautiful job.
Well, you're very kind, Sue. Thank you very much for your words and for your phone call. And I think you laid it out pretty clearly as well. I do think there is a diabolical element to this. There's more than just human considerations to this. As you said, Satan is the father of lies. He is active. He's in the world. And unfortunately, he's deceived a lot of people within the church even to follow this path, including Nancy Pelosi. Now, she is technically, she is a Catholic. You could say, well, she's a bad Catholic. You can say that. Maybe she's a non-practicing Catholic, despite what she says. But she is a baptized Catholic. But we need to get her back on track. And Archbishop Cordiglione has said very, very clearly, not just on this occasion in the letter, but with his campaign of rosaries and roses for Nancy, he's pray for her. We need to get a lot of people praying for her and everybody who's in office. And that's exactly what the church has taught from the very beginning, back to the days of the New Testament with St. Paul, you know, saying, pray for those in high office. And that's why we do that in the prayers of the faithful every Mass. It's the most powerful prayer that we can offer. But Sue, thank you very much for listening, and thanks for your encouragement. And let's keep praying for not only our bishops, but also for people like Nancy Pelosi. And I think one of the reasons why Archbishop Cordiglione felt like he had to do something right now about this, because he had, number one, exhausted all other attempts to try to reach her and talk to her personally about this. But because of the impending decision, the leaked impending decision from the Supreme Court, potentially overturning Roe, and Pelosi's move to then try to get abortion protections enshrined in federal law, felt like he had to make a move right now. And you can argue about the timing, but I do think it was the right call. And we need to pray that she'll heed the warning. Let's go now to Dana, who is in Orange County, California. Hello, Dana. What's your take on this?
Well, it's really a fascinating situation, I think. I want to say that I'm not making a claim this was a political decision. It was a Catholic decision. But it I think it's going to have real political ramifications. Nick already mentioned one of them, that all the bishops might not go along with it. There's going to be a natural tendency to say, does this apply to other political figures, especially Supreme Court members who are Catholic? And is this going to be a catalyst for all churches, not just the Catholic Church, to fully be able to participate in the political process, but have to pay American taxes and state taxes just like any other business or organization in the country. I think it might have those could potentially be the other ramifications and consequences of this particular action.
Yeah, and the whole question of and a lot of people have raised this, by the way, Dana. Thank you for your call about the tax-exempt status of the church. By simply talking about things like this, could that put the tax-exempt charity status of the church in question because it's being quote-unquote political? Well, I don't know about that. I don't claim to know about the ins and outs of all of that. But I do know this. The great G.K. Chesterton, he once said, you know, two things that we're not supposed to talk about at parties, right? Religion and politics. Religion and politics. We said, those are the two most important subjects because religion has to do with love of God and politics is about love of neighbor. And that's really what it's all about, right? It's about love of neighbor. And how do we do this on a societal level? And this is the great commandment. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. This is what Jesus taught. And so we've got to implement this. This is reality. And there's no better way to do this. And by the way, one thing I also forgot to mention when our last caller, Sue, from Wisconsin, was on the line. Because I live in Canada, I know what she's talking about with respect to euthanasia, and which is the other side of the argument, the beginning of life, the end of life. We have to protect life from conception to natural death. In Canada, euthanasia is booming. I mean, it is absolutely on the rise. And once the door is open to crack, it'll be kicked open 100% all the way. And we've seen this in other countries like the Netherlands, where when euthanasia got going in the Netherlands, it was only apparently for extreme cases. Well, now there are children in the Netherlands who are ending their own lives because they just don't want to go on anymore. And eventually this will come to North America as well. And I just think that all of these issues are related, obviously. And so there is a diabolical element to this. And she also mentioned, by the way, Cardinal Burke. I actually met Cardinal Burke a couple of years ago in person. He really impressed me. I know he's got enemies as well. But I met him, and I found him extremely pastoral and just somebody who, and this is a subjective thing, of course, but I really felt like this guy exuded Christ. He really did. And I have high respect for him, for Colonel Burke. Anyway, it's just kind of a sidebar. So let's go back to the phones right now. Let's go to Kern, who's calling from St. Francis, Wisconsin. Hello, Kern.
Hello. I have been very concerned, especially about our president, of course, being Catholic, and him receiving communion for many years. Especially since he's changed his position from so-called pro-life to where he's at now, which is just totally diametrically opposed to the church and to Christ himself. I was just surprised when he met the Holy Father that the Holy Father didn't take him aside into, you know, to private and not only talk about that my bishops are thinking about you not receiving Holy Communion, but even thinking about, you know, I'm going to get my bishops together to work on a bull of excommunication. Because that thing that seems, it might be the only one that saves a soul, just like John Fisher did with the king in his time.
Well, let me jump in on that, Kern. Thank you for calling in. Now, as you know, President Biden recently did meet Pope Francis. Now, President Biden claims that Pope Francis told him to go on receiving communion and that you're a great Catholic. Did he really say that? I don't know that that can be verified. But let me just deal with this question of excommunication for a second, because what Archbishop Cordiglione did, that is not excommunication. And the Pillar, which has done a little piece on this, they've been covering this this issue for a little while. They talk a little bit about this, that obviously when it comes to excommunication, this is a formal penalty which is handed out to those who've committed a specific canonical crime. But this, in this case, this communion ban, this would be regarded, technically speaking, as a matter of sacramental discipline. Now, I want to talk also about because a lot of people are asking the question, you know, when you read about this, when you the comments to the original Twitter post on this with the letter, a lot of people are saying, why doesn't this happen with Biden? Well, first of all, Archbishop Corleone only has control over his own archdiocese, which is, of course, that of San Francisco. Now, the bishop in charge of where Joe Biden goes, and by the way, Pelosi spends a lot of her time in Washington, so she will no doubt still try to attend Catholic parishes in the Washington area and receive the Eucharist. And right now there's no ban on her there, only in her home diocese. But Cardinal Wilton Gregory is, of course, Archbishop in Washington, D.C. And he said back in 2020, he told the Religion News Service that he would not deny President Biden the Eucharist because of his pro-choice position, because of his pro-abortion stance. And here's what he said. The quote from Cardinal Gregory was, quote, "I don't want to go to the table with a gun on the table first," end of quote. So he views that as, you know, having a gun on the table. Let's not talk about the victims of abortion who definitely do die. But that's his position on it. So he's not going to do it. He's clearly not of the mind right now that he's going to say to Biden, you can't receive the Eucharist in Washington. So maybe he'll change his mind. I don't know. We need to pray for these guys, as we need to pray for Biden and Pelosi and all public figures, really all Catholics, that they come online with the church's teaching. So this is obviously going to be something that's going to come up, as another caller indicated, as U.S. bishops get together to talk about this, the pending decision from the Supreme Court is going to have its effects. And really, I'm amazed. I'm so shocked in a good way that we're seeing some traction here. We're seeing some pro-life traction here that I never thought I'd see until maybe I was, you know, sitting on my porch as an old man. But this is happening now. And again, I think prayer has so much to do with this. So many have been praying. Father Rocky has written this book, you know, The Memorare Moment, and it's partially about the fact that we are praying. We're trying to get 500 million memoraries prayed for an end to abortion in the United States and all around the world as well. And we're seeing prayer work mysteriously. The hand of God is involved here. And so let's keep praying, and let's keep on keeping on when it comes to this. We've got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Well, every Friday, producer Jim Shaper produces The Week That Was. It's kind of a collection of the best of the week on the show. And because he's extra happy today, because his St. Louis Blues are back in the series with Colorado. They beat them handily last night. And I don't know, I kind of want to cheer for St. Louis because of Jim. But on the other hand, Colorado has a superstar player named Cale, and he even spells his name the same, Cale McCarr. So I don't know. But I could say Jim McCard. He McCarred up a hodgepodge of all kinds of fun stuff for the week that was. So here it is right now without further ado. This is the story of St. Titus Brandsma. This is what he wrote. He said, quote, "Blessed loneliness. I find myself in this cell as if I was in my own home. So far, I've not been bored at all. On the contrary, I am alone, that is true, but the Lord is closer to me than ever. Few times have I ever felt so happy," end of quote. Well, talk about having a supernatural outlook on things. There was a guy who was actually at that game, and he kept his ticket stub. And because that film has become so iconic, so popular, he held on to it all these years, and he wound up selling it at an auction. The ticket sold for $1,050. Not bad.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if this happened to you. If you're married, or maybe you've attended a wedding where there have been wedding crashers, has this ever happened to you? George is calling from Buckeye, Arizona.
I got married a week and a half ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. A lot of people did show up that we hadn't invited. And it was actually, it was an opportunity to show our faith. And we didn't do a garter toss. I did wash it at my wife's feet. So it was an opportunity to show other people what true marriage is about.
It appears my wife is on line one, so I better take this call. Whenever your wife calls the show, you better take it. So, Patricia, what is going on?
Hi, I'm taking off my socks now so you can wash my feet at the end of your show.
I read a graduation address by the Catholic author Mary Eberstadt. She gave an illustration about how a few years ago, she gave a talk at a secular campus, and after the talk, she said that a young woman came up to her and she said, "I recently became Catholic." She was like, "Okay, what made you do that?" This young woman told Mary Eberstadt that she was an only child and she was raised by a single mother with no religious training whatsoever. But when she was in high school, she became really, really good friends, best friends, with another girl.
"You're my best friend, that's it."
And this girl happened to come from a very large, very devout Catholic family. And she thought, wow, this family is full of energy, so full of life. She told Mary Eberstadt, "Hey, the reason why I became Catholic ultimately was I wanted what they had." I wouldn't say that once you've experienced the love of Jesus, that no book, even the Bible, ceases to matter anymore. I don't think that that's true because, as St. Jose Maria said, love can only be repaid with love. Love can only be repaid with love. So if you want to love him back, how do you do that? Well, you can't love someone you don't know. And the only way to know who Jesus really is and what he teaches, you've got to know the Bible. When I was a kid, and much to my shame, I stole a pencil from one of my classmates. It was a monkey pencil. It was really cool. I wanted to have it. So I stole it from my friend Jamie. And the teacher was like, "Someone stole Jamie's pencil." He was in tears and everything. Who did it? And I never fessed up. It was so difficult to do that. But then it becomes easier and easier through time. And that's the corrupting influence of sin. When we go to confession, we receive the forgiveness. But also, the priest usually gives us a penance. Even though the sin is forgiven, there's still a wound in our heart that remains. And we have to work on that.
We're going to return this pencil in pristine working condition.
All right. Producer Jim with the week that was. Great job. Great job. You know, sin is never worth it, man. The monkey pencil was totally not worth it. Believe me. Believe me. The sense of guilt and shame. I needed penance. Actually, you know how I fulfill my penance most of the time now, Jim? It's on the golf course. Game of golf, that is truly, truly penitential. But we all love it. We all love it. And a lot of people are going to be spending this weekend glued to the tube watching the PGA Championship. It's the second major of the year. It's at Southern Hills. Beautiful course. It's got a nice clock tower in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was last time a major was held there. It was also the PGA back in 2007. Tiger won. But it was later in the year. Oh, we got some CBS golf music. It's fantastic in the background. Love it, love it, love it. I kind of like what the PGA Tour has done this year with the majors, kind of spreading. Every month there's something big now. Right, in March it was the Players Championship, which isn't a major. It's like the fifth major, they call it. It's unofficial, great field. Good tournament. So the Players Championship's in March. Masters is in April. May it's the PGA. June it's the U.S. Open. It's always on Father's Day weekend. July it's the British. Then August is the FedEx Cup playoffs, and they want to get it all out of the way before September, before the NFL hits, because once football gets on the docket, forget about it. It is still king. The ratings are still king. But a lot of people are wondering this year, obviously the dominant story is about who's not at the PGA Championship this year, and it's the guy who won last year. 1 year ago today, he was riding high. He was a modern-day folk hero. He was the oldest player to ever win a major championship. I'm talking about Phil Mickelson, who, if it were not for a certain guy who was named Eldrick Taunt Woods, better known as Tiger, Phil Mickelson would definitely be considered the player of his generation. He would have had a lot more than six major championships, no doubt. But Phil is nowhere to be found. There have been wild rumors. People have seen him. But he hasn't been heard from since February. He kind of finds himself now a pariah. He's not defending his championship. He also wasn't at the Masters, even though he's a former Masters champion. It's an intriguing situation. What has he done to make himself such a villain in the eyes of many. By the way, there are rumors that he has been hiding out in Montana, growing a ZZ Top beard. Somebody saw him playing with a friend in San Diego, where he's from. He did have a beard, but it wasn't a ZZ Top beard. And so he's kind of become this yeti, you know, in the words of Alan Shipnuck, a journalist. And it all kind of started with Alan Shipnuck, by the way, how this happened, because he put out a book that just came out this week during PGA Championship Week, and it's called Phil, The Rip-Roaring and Unauthorized Biography of Golf's Most Colorful Superstar. Well, an excerpt from the book came out in February, and it was not exactly flattering to Phil Mickelson. And you might have heard, sports fans might have heard, there is a rival golf league that started up, and Greg Norman is kind of the official face of it. It's called the LIV Golf Series, and it's backed by money from the Saudis, from the Saudi government. And Phil Mickelson was quoted, this excerpt from the book, this biography by Alan Shipnuck, was released on a website called the Fire Pit Collective back in February. And Phil is claiming that everything he said to Alan Shipnuck was off the record. Alan Shipnuck denies that. He says, Phil knew that I was going to put this into the book, number one. And Phil talked about how he wanted to get involved with this breakaway Saudi league that's trying to draw players away from the PGA Tour, set itself up. I mean, there was absolutely huge money in this league. They're offering $4 million first prize payouts. Huge appearance fees. They had another tournament. There was a tournament in Saudi Arabia that happened earlier this year. Phil went to it, so did a number of the other top players. Well, Phil gave this interview he says he didn't give the interview, but he says it was off the record, to Alan Shipnuck. And he talked about dealing with the Saudis and why he was doing it. And he referenced, of course, the murder of the Washington Post reporter Jamal Khashoggi, and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi. It's an incredibly horrific and sordid tale. And why these other golfers would have wanted to deal with these guys. And Phil told Alan Shipnuck, the Saudis are scary mothers. Now, he said something else, but I can't say what he actually said, but you get the drift. This is a family program. But he wanted to put pressure on the PGA Tour. He wanted to he thought that the PGA Tour is being too controlling of players, and, you know, the money that the Saudis were offering was so good that anyway, so this excerpt from the book, which has now been released, got put out in February, and immediately the backlash against Phil was swift from a lot of his fellow players. I think the PGA Tour actually suspended Phil, but the PGA Tour does not announce. If someone has been suspended, they never announce it publicly. For example, some years ago, there was speculation that Dustin Johnson, who at one point was number one in the world, was suspended for drug usage. But nobody ever said why. He just wasn't around for a while. It seems hard to believe that Phil would have skipped the Masters unless he was somehow suspended. But he was not there. He was not there. And most people think it's because he's kind of gone into hiding since February. He says his comments were misconstrued. And so this book has come out about Phil. I'm going to read it because I'm a huge golf fan. And Phil is a super colorful character. And I think the book, if I'm right about this, presents all kinds of different sides of Phil. Not just this potentially prideful and greedy side, but also his big heart, his generosity. He's done a lot of good for people as well. His wife, Amy, had breast cancer some years ago. It was a really tough situation for him and his family. I know he supported a lot of charities and causes, but he's also has a well-documented gambling problem. And Alan Shipnuck says, in an excerpt from the book that I read, that at one point he owed $40 million in gambling debts. This was only within a four-year period of time, between 2010 and 2014. Shipnuck estimates that Phil was probably only making about, I say only, he was making about $40 million a year at the time. Those are prime earning years for him, his endorsements, his on-course earnings. But with California taxes, because he lives in California, and he was always railing against California taxes, that it was probably probably about $20 million he was taking home. And then, of course, you got to pay for your private jet. You got to pay for all these things. So maybe he's got maybe $10 million to play with every year. That means that, okay, if he lost $40 million gambling over a four-year period, he's essentially either breaking even in life or maybe bleeding into the red a little bit, which is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So he has maybe an addiction problem. So there's issues there of stewardship. So you think, man, there's a few of the deadly sins here that are in play that can trip anybody up. And anyways, I just think it's an intriguing story. And it's on everybody's mind. And this golf writer, Alan Shipnuck, people are mad at him for this excerpt coming out back in February. And people think he's just trying to shill his book. But Shipnuck says, look, would you prefer that it just come out when the book was released, the week of the PGA Championship, and Phil would have to be answering questions about this at the tournament as he's trying to defend his title at Southern Hills? Would that have been worse? I think it probably would have been a lot worse. But anyways, I hope Phil does come back. But we'll see. We'll see. Right now, he's in the wind. He's in the wind, but he's out there somewhere. And anyway, so it's an intriguing storyline as we go into the weekend at Southern Hills. Well, it has been a wild week here on the show and a very exciting week. I hope that you will check out all of our past episodes. If you missed any, you can get the podcast. You can share them with a friend. Please tell people about the show if you like it, because that's how people find out about it. Studies have shown. They've done polls on this. People find out and they listen to radio programs because of a friend. And you're my friends. I want to thank my other friends, Jim Schaefer for producing, Patrick Alok for taking your calls. Tim Murray's coming up next. Stay tuned. Take it away, Michaela. Have a great weekend, everybody. God bless.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.